Welcome, Gemach Tima Tova. We are here in Mishkan Sipora, virtually, on Daf Hey Omid Beis in Masechet Tanit, and we're still in the middle of this rather lengthy set of short agadot, these comments between Rav Nachman
Are you
and Rabbi Yitzchak.
recording? You have to press record.
Yeah, we're recording. We're recording.
Okay, fine.
These comments between Rav Nachman and Rav Yitzchak. So the Gemara, the Omar Le Reb, you see where we are? About 10 lines down, right here next to the arrow. Let me make it a little bit bigger. Ben, I'm muting you. You seem to be on another conversation. So Omar Le Rav Nachman Rav Yitzchak. My dichtiv, what's the meaning of this posuk in Shmuel Aleph? Vayihi kasher zaken Shmuel. When Shmuel Hanavi grew old. V'misiv Shmuel kulehai. Did Shmuel ever actually get that old? Siv, it's not a word that's too familiar to us. Siv, like from the same language as Saba or Safta, did he ever actually get that old? Did he ever get gray in the hair, long in the tooth? Vaha bar chamishim v'shtayim hava. Shmuel apparently was 52 when he died. De Omar Mar, meit b'chamishim v'shtayim shana. Zehu mitato shmel Shmuel haramati. The Gemara says, elsewhere, the Gemara says that Shmuel was 52 when he died. This is significant because the Gemara is trying to figure out, in terms of karet, in terms of the biblical punishment of karet, which it's not 100% clear what the karet means. You die childless, you die young, you die before your pre-prescribed time. But how young do you have to be like suspected that you died, that your death was ascribable to karet? So there the Gemara actually says that 52 is not young enough to be suspected of having met a bad end of karet. And it learns out from Shmuel's age. So there the Gemara is talking about 52 being not unreasonably or unusually young. Even, you know, to us, the idea, I assure you, the idea of dying at the age of 52 seems tragically premature. I say staring down that age in about 6 months' time myself. Even in the days of Chazal, 52 was considered relatively young. You know how these death statistics work in terms of the average age. It's not that people didn't live to old age in antiquity or even 100, 200 years ago. The world knew about people that lived well into their 90s or even to 100. But very many people succumbed to all types of diseases. Childhood diseases and young age diseases, and people died of accidents and traumas that are a lot less common today. But if you didn't die of one of those things, you stood a good enough chance to reach an old age just the same as anyone today does. Because the outer limits of the human lifespan have not changed all that much. Right? There were people in the 18th century and the 17th century who lived to be well into their 90s. But statistically, it was unusual. So it's not that like anybody got to that point. It's just that the statistics, the shape of the bell curve was distributed differently. Many people died much younger. But even in the days of Chazal, 52 was considered to be a young age a young age to die. So what does the Pasuk mean in Sefer Shmuel? Oh, hey, welcome back, Ephraim. We missed you. You're muted, but we missed you. We can unmute you. Well, now you are unmuted. Welcome back.
Thank you.
You did it.
I had downloaded perfectly.
Oh, you did an excellent job of blowing the shofar. Excellent job of blowing the shofar. So what does it mean that when Shmuel was old, he died when he was 52? He never reached old age. The Omar Mar Bar Chamishim V'Shtayim Shana V'Zeu Mitato Shel Shmuel Aramati. Shmuel died when he was 50. When he was 52. So Omar Le Hachi Omar Rabbi Yochanan Zikna Kaftsa Alav. Old age sprung on him. He aged prematurely. In years, he was only 52 years old. But like that story about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who was only 17, and he was 70. Hareani kiven shivim shana. So apparently Shmuel aged prematurely. I saw some. You know, it's this crazy thing. Here we are. We're in different phases of lockdown, and I saw somebody the other day who I haven't seen. I don't think I've seen him in since all of this crazy Corona Mishigas began. Even though he lives in the neighborhood. And he's usually somebody that I see on a regular basis in shul. And I saw him for the first time. And I saw, having not seen him in 6 months, he started going gray. He never really had any gray. And he started going gray. If I'd seen him every day over the past 6 months, I wouldn't have noticed it. But having seen him after that long interruption, it struck me. Oh my goodness. He's really taken it on the chin, the old age from Corona. So this is what happened to Shmuel. Old age kind of snuck up on him, jumped up on him rather quickly. And that's why it seemed that he was older than his actual 52 years. Dichtiv nichamti ki himlachti et Shaul. I regretted the fact that I anointed Shaul as king. You know, Shmuel was very ambivalent about the kingship altogether. The Jewish people asked him to make a king. He really doesn't want one, but he has to follow God's command. He makes Shaul the king. He anoints Shaul as the king, and then comes to regret it because the kingship of Shaul was not, let's say, exactly what he had hoped for or imagined. Amar lefanav ribono shel olam shkaltani kemoshe va'aron. He says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you equated me with Moses and Aaron. Dichtiv Moshe va'aron b'kohanav u'shemuel b'korei shemo. The pasuk from Tehillim that we say as part of Kabbalat Shabbat. Now, the pasuk talks about Moshe and Aaron and the leadership of Shmuel. And since they're mentioned in the same pasuk, they're somehow equated. Elsewhere, the Gemara learns out this idea, Moshe bedoro, Kishmuel bedoro, Yiftach bedoro, Kishmuel bedoro, that the spiritual leadership of the Jewish people, whoever is filling that role at the time, has the status and the authority of the greats that came before him. And it's even though on one hand we have this idea of Yeridat HaDorot, that the current occupant of the position can't really match up to the greats that came before him. Right? You say, oh, whoever, usually it's whoever is the current occupant of the White House or Balfour or wherever you, probably not Buckingham Palace. Buckingham Palace, they seem to be pleased with the occupant. But you know, you say like, you know, oh, it's not, you know, he's no Menachem Begin. He's no, I knew John F. Kennedy. You're no John F. Kennedy. Right? So on one hand, it's true. There's Yiridat HaDorot. Every generation is somehow diminished. But on the other hand, the authority of anyone, any Shofet, any Navi, is in some ways equivalent to the greatest that came before him. whatever one thinks of the current occupant of the White House, everyone understands that constitutionally he has all the same powers and authority as the 44 men that came before him, as Lincoln and as Washington. And if he can, you know, get 51 people in the Senate to vote for his nominee to the Supreme Court, that person is going to be a Supreme Court justice. So Shmuel says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look, you equated me with Moshe and Aaron. Lo batlu maaseh yadayhem b'chayehem, af ani lo yitbatel maaseh yaday b'chayai. So he says, look, the legacy of Moses and Aaron, it endured, it outlasted them. It wasn't canceled while they were alive. And he begs, so too, let my legacy live on past me, right? And in other words, I appointed Shaul to be the Melech, so please let him serve out his reign. Please let him continue to be the king, and presumably let him succeed. So Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Heichi Avid. So how should he work this out? Because Shaul was destined to leave the kingship, to have a short reign, to not really succeed, and to clear the path for David, who would be the king writ large, the ideal version of what a king of the Jewish people should be. So HaKadosh Baruch says, so what should I do? Limot Shaul, lo kishavik Shmuel. But limot Shaul. No, hold on a second. Omar Kadosh Baruch Hu, hechi avid. Limot Shaul, lo kishavik Shmuel. So what should I do? Should I allow Saul to be killed? Should I let Saul die now? So Shmuel lo shavik. He won't stand for it, right? He wouldn't want to see Shaul killed. Limot Shmuel. So should we say, well, we'll have Shmuel die so that he won't see the end of the reign of Shaul? Adezutar Miranine Abatrai. All of the small ones, the scuttle butters and the speakers of Lashon Hara and the people that write columns in the newspaper will be Maranin Abatrai. They'll be wagging their tongues. They'll be whispering about him, right? They'll say that Shmuel died young because something he did displeased the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Lo limot Shaul v'lo limot Shmuel. And if we allow both of them to live on, kfar higia malchut David. But there's a problem, because it's time for David to become the king. And unless we clear the path of Shaul, David's kingdom will be delayed. And that is not something that is not something we want. V'ein malchut nogat b'chaverta afilu kemilo nima. And one kingship can't overlap with another kingship even by a hair's breadth. Right? In order for David to become king, Shaul has to clear the way. E.F. Shar l'shnei melachim lachdir b'keter achat. To paraphrase Rashi's famous comment about the sun and the moon, hear about Shaul and David. So Omar Kadosh Baruch Hu, akpitza lav zikna. I will cause Shmuel to age prematurely, so that when he dies, people won't say, well, he died prematurely, and therefore, obviously, he was being punished for something. Hainu dichtiv.
But what does he gain? In other words, if the idea was to have Shaul die early so he wouldn't see Shmuel be removed, to have Shmuel die early so she wouldn't see Shaul be removed from office, so Shaul still lived long enough to you're saying to not, the idea was to not extend Shaul's reign longer than it had to be? That's the idea?
Right.
So
and also not to allow Shmuel to suffer the indignity of seeing it all unravel.
The idea was to have Shmuel die before Shaul.
Yeah. V'hainu d'chtiv, u'Shaul yoshev begivah tachat ha'eshel b'ramah. Right, the Pasuk says that Shaul lived in Giv'ah, in Binyamin, you know, where the first capital was, under the tree in Ramah. So there's a problem because these are two different places. And as the Pasuk makes it seem like this is the same place, Giv'ah and Ramah. But really, these are two different places. V'chi ma inyan Giv'ah, it's Ramah. Ela omar lecha, mi garam l'sho'ul sheyeshev begivah shtei shanim v'mechtza tfilato shel Shmuel haramati. Why was Shaul set up his capital in Givah for 2.5 years? So he was zochet to that extra 2.5 years because of this tfilah of Shmuel. Umi Midchi Gavra Mikame Gavra. So the Gemara asks, how does this work that one person is set aside for another person? Shaul is the Melech, but somehow he's pushed out in order to make room for David HaMelech. There's a similar Agadah that appears in different contexts about David HaMelech's death. David HaMelech was, he knew that he was going to die on Shabbat. And it's not nice to die on Shabbat. So he asked the Kadosh Baruch Hu to, you know, give him an extra day, so he doesn't have to die on Shabbat. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, can't do it. Can't help you, can't get you, can you get me off the hook for old time's sake? Can't do it. Why? Because when you die, the reign of Shlomo begins. And the reign of Shlomo means Binyan Beit HaMikdash. Do you want to delay that for even one day? So David says, I don't want to delay it for even one day. And the Gemara says that's why Beit HaMikdash, even though conceived by David HaMelech, was actually built by Shlomo HaMelech, and nevertheless, very often in Chazal we call it, or in Tanakh, we call it Beit David. Right? Because he had a merit in the whole operation. So Umi Midchi Gavra Mikame Gavra. How can you push one person aside for the benefit of another? Words. In other words, if Shmuel ages prematurely, so that he doesn't have to witness Shaul's downfall, right? Which means that David can come around. So is that fair? Like, why is it we push off Shmuel from the stage for the benefit of Shaul? So to Omar in, yes, we do this. This happens. To Omar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Mai Dichtiv Al Kain. It's a pasuk in Hosea. Al Kain Chatzavti Banviim Haragtim BeImrifi. I have chopped down the prophets. I have slain them through the Imre Fi, with the words of my mouth. B'ma'aseihem lo ne'emar, ela b'Imre Fi. Right? They're not chopped down because of their actions, but because of the words of my mouth. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes in fact, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes does bring a premature death by decree, by Imrei Fi, Imrei Fiv, right, the words of his mouth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes has to decree the early death of someone in order that history proceeds according to the course. Alma midchi gavra mikame gavra. So apparently, sometimes one person is pushed aside for the benefit of someone else. Okay, now the Gemara goes on with another Agada. Rav Nachman, Rav Yitzchak, have a yatve besudata. Rav Nachman, again, all these agadot are taking place between these two figures. They were sitting and having a meal. Omer le Rav Nachman, Rav Yitzchak, lema mar milta. Say a dvar, right? Say us a dvar Torah. So Omer le hochi, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, ein masichin besuda, shema yaktim kana laveshet. He says, "No, I can't. You're not supposed to talk while you're eating, because maybe the food will go down the wrong pipe." This was an idea. I mean, we're not careful about this today, but in the days of old, people were very careful about these things. That you weren't supposed to talk at the dinner table, because while you talk, you know, like there's the kane and the veshet. There's the esophagus and the trachea. Right? So, doctor, explain the difference between the esophagus and the trachea.
Well, trachea is for air, the esophagus is for food.
Right. So,
how is it
when I swallow something normally, it knows not to go down the trachea?
Because your epiglottis pushes forward to protect the airway so that the food is directed down into your esophagus.
Right.
Glottis. It's like a tongue that slips over the airway to protect it.
Right.
When you're swallowing.
So, but in fact, if you're talking, in theory, it is possible for food to fall down the wrong pipe.
Right. If you're talking while you're eating, you run the risk of food being directed the wrong way.
I mean, is this
while you're in the process of talking and, suck some food down into your trachea. That would be called aspiration. So it happens.
But in normal people, it's rather rare.
No. Right. Normally, you're protected by this mechanism of the epiglottis.
Right.
Coming over to the trachea.
Right. And the Gemara mentions this in passing, to remind us of this halacha about not talking while you eat. So he said to him, say a dvar Torah. So he says, I can't, I'm in the middle of eating, and if I might choke. So
was it maybe a little bit humorous? You're saying that's the dvar Torah that he would...
Oh, maybe no, like, except he says...
He said something later, that's true, but in other words, that's the dvar Torah I'll give you.
Right.
Right.
Oh, it's like somebody says, say a Dvar Torah, and you say any table that doesn't have a Dvar Torah is like the people are eating Mizivche Metim, says the Mishnah in Avot. Right? And as the Mishnah in Avot says that if you're eating without Dvar Torah, it's like you're eating off of some abominable, sacrifice of the dead. So I guess you could be Yotze with that, but...
That means you either have to talk or to eat, but don't do both together.
Right. But then he does actually say, after they're done eating, Omer lehochi, Omer b'yochran, Yaakov. So after they're done eating, he tells the malacha. He says, malacha, Yaakov avinu lo met. This famous idea that, Od avinu chai. Right? Od am Yisrael chai, Od avinu chai. That Yaakov avinu didn't die. So Omer le, v'chi b'chtei saftu, savdanya, v'chantu chantaya, v'kavru kavraya. Says, oh yeah, well, if he's not dead, I wonder what he was thinking when they eulogized him and when they embalmed him and when they buried him. It's like what the skeptics say about Chabad. Right? If the Rebbe didn't die, he must be rather annoyed that they buried him. So Omar le Mikra ani Doresh. So he says, no, I'm giving you a drasha and a pasuk. Shnemar va'ata al tira avdi Yaakov ni'um Hashem va'al techat Yisrael ki hineni moshiacha merachok ve'et zaracha me'eretz shavim. Right? There's a pasuk in Shevyam, right? A pasuk in Yirmiyah, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Al tira Yaakov, don't be afraid, Jacob, Avdi Yaakov. I'll save you, no matter where you are, and I'll save your zarecha, your descendants, from the lands of Me'eretz Shevyam, from the land of their captivity." So the Gemara says, Makish hu lizaro, mazaro b'chayim, af hu b'chayim. It makes a hekesh, it makes a comparison between Yaakov and the descendants of Yaakov. What's the pshat of that pasuk?
The
Zion
of the descendants.
That what?
Lives on in his descendants.
That he lived on in his descendants. You know, it's like that Woody Allen line. Woody Allen said, some people want to live forever through their children. I'd like to live forever by not dying. So Yaakov Avinu lo met, it doesn't mean he didn't die. It means he lives on in his as long as the Bnei Yisrael are alive, then Yaakov somehow is alive.
I've sometimes thought of it kind of like that parable of the ship of Theseus, I think it's called, where you take a ship and you like remove one board and then you replace it and eventually you replace the entire ship, and the question is whether it's still the same ship if you literally replace it. So in other words,
the ship leaves Crete and sails for Troy, and at a certain point the ship starts to rot. So they replace this board with another board. And they place another. So by the time it reaches its port, there's not a single piece of it left that was original.
Right.
But is it the same?
But if we do consider it to be the same ship,
right,
then because of the, you know, how it started off in that mission, then that's a way you could do Yaakov in a sense anyway. I mean, you know, we are as if we're part of some sort of nation, then we have that sort of continuity. Even if he himself isn't there, it's not really, you know, relevant whether he physically was part of the nation as much as the nation continued on.
Right.
Is the George Washington Bridge today the same one that it was when it was built? No, because they
replaced every single piece.
Back again and rebuild it, replacing and painting.
All
the time.
Right, or sometimes it's, in other words, my father inherited a hatchet from his father. But the handle rotted, so he had the handle replaced. Is it the same hatchet? Certainly. I inherited the hatchet from my father, but the metal head got cracked, so I replaced that. Is it the same hatchet? At a certain point, but the classic example, the Greek example that David mentioned, there the point is the journey. In other words, the ship sets out from Crete and heads to Troy. Along the way, it has to repair itself and ends up changing each and every board and every nail and every stitch of the sail. But it's the same one because it's part of this continual motion of the journey from point A to point B. And that's, I think, the point here of Yaakov Avinu Vizaro, right? That it's the mission of the Jewish people that makes him alive. It's like all these discussions now about manned missions to Mars and then to distant planets and, you know, all these ethical questions, you know, like, would you take a sign up for a journey to space that you knew you could never survive? Right? You'd be part of a crew that would have children. And the children's children would reach the destination, because it would take 100 years to get there in deep space. Right? Would you sign up for such a journey? And if so, would it be considered that you are actually headed off to Alpha Centauri or wherever it is that you're going, knowing that you'll never get there, but in the hope that your descendants will? This is the conversation. Let's put a pin in the conversation about Yaakov Avinu Lo Met. I'll come back to it momentarily. So Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, Kol HaOmer Rachav. These are all, it appears, disconnected statements, but perhaps there's a way we can try to figure out how they do connect one to the other. Kol HaOmer Rachav Rachav Miad Nikri. Whoever calls out the name of Rachav, you remember who Rachav was at the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua. Rachav is the, what's the polite word for it?
The night.
What?
Woman of the night.
The woman of the night, the harlot, in whose home the Miraglim are, the Miraglim of Yehoshua are
hosted.
Are hosted and spared. But nevertheless, despite the fact that the Midrash explains that she did tshuva and she converted and she became a significant player in the Jewish people, the Pshuto Shel Mikra means that she's not exactly, in the line of work we would choose for our daughters. So the Gemara says that anybody that calls out her name, Rachav, Rachav, immediately has a...
she became Yehoshua's wife.
According to the Midrash. So anybody that calls out her name, Miyad Nikre, has a case of Balkeri, immediately has a seminal emission, because she was known as being an attractive woman, which is perhaps, part of her profession. So Omer le Rav Nachman, Ana Amina velo ichpat li. Rav Nachman said, I say Rachav, Rachav, that doesn't happen to me. If I think of the most beautiful woman, besides my wife, I don't know who that is. But they say, in Hollywood there are beautiful women. So can you imagine just saying the name of one of those starlets? It causes you to be aroused. So Rav Nachman says, I don't know what you're talking about. I can say the name Rachav, and that doesn't happen to me. So Omer le ki ka'amina biyod'a uva makira uva maskir et shma. So he says, no, it's not talking about you. It's talking about the people that were her customers. Right, you see the Tosfot here says Perish Biyoda Shabaleha, people that had some of that carnal knowledge with her. So those people, if they say her name and think about her and call out her name, so those are the people that experience this type of arousal. But a normal person, this doesn't happen to a normal person. Okay. Omale ki ka'amina ki havu miftere mehadade. When Rav Yitzchak and Rav Nachman would separate from each other, when they would part company, when they would go on their own separate ways, Omar Lei, Rav Nachman said to Rav Yitzchak, Livarchanmar, give us a bracha. Omar Lei, Emshal lecha mashal, Lama hadaver dome, La adam shehaya holech bamidbar, Vahaya ra'ev, Ve'ayef, Vitzamei. A person is going on the way in the desert, and he's tired, and he's hungry, and he's thirsty. Umatsa ilan sheperotav mitukin v'tzilo na'e v'amat hamayim overet tachtav. And he sees in the middle of the desert, he sees this oasis. He sees a tree. It's a very famous Gemara with sweet fruit, and it gives nice shade, and it's got a stream of water at its feet. Achal miperotav shatami memav yeshav betzilo. He eats the fruit. He drinks the water. He sits in the shade of this oasis. Ukeshebikesh lelech amar. And when he wants to leave, what does he say? And it's his, this tree and its fruit and its water, it saved his life. He was in the desert. He was marching through the desert, you know, like the New Yorker cartoon. He's, you know, in ragged clothes, crawling through the desert. Water, water. So when he wants to leave, what does he say? Like, what compliment can he pay to this tree? Ilan, ilan b'ma avarchecha. What can I bless you? Imom, what bracha can you give to a tree? Right? Im omer lecha shiu perutecha mitukin. Hare perutecha mitukin. If you want me to give you a bracha that your fruit should be sweet, so it already is. Shiehe tzilcha na'eh, that the shade that you give should be nice. Hare tzilcha na'eh, it already is. Shetehe amat ha'mayim overet tachtecha, that a stream of fresh water should flow right at your roots. Hare amat ha'mayim overet tachtecha. Right? So what kind of bracha can I give? You have it all. Like, as far as trees go, like, you've got everything you need. So what bracha can I give you? Now remember, Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman asked a bracha from Rav Yitzchak. Now these are two people, they sat there learning together. Right? It's about the relationship of Torah, of two chavrutot, even if one is a teacher and one is a student, but they become like colleagues. So the comparison to a tree and to fruit and to water, these are all, of course, symbols of Torah, right? The tree, Eitz Chaim, the fruit, like the rimon that we ate the other night, you know, the mitzvot, the water, of course. Torah itself is compared to water. So this is like, what can I give you? You want a bracha from me? You've got it all. Right? You've got Torah, you've got mitzvot, you've got... Ela yehi ratzon shekol netiyot shenotin mimcha, here at the top of Davov, yu kemotcha. Rather, what bracha can I give you? That all of your descendants, all of the trees that will grow from the seeds of your fruit will be like you, will have what you have. Afata b'ma avarchecha. Im b'torah, hare torah. Im b'osher, hare osher. Right? What bracha, Rav Yitzchak? What bracha, Rav Nachman? What bracha can I give you? Should I bless you that you should have Torah? You have Torah. If I should bless you that you should have wealth, you have wealth. Im b'vanim, hare banim. That you should have children, I bless you. You already have children. Eli hiratzon shiutzeatzei me'echa kimotcha. Rather, I bless you that your children should be like you. That your children should have all of your strengths and none of your weaknesses. That your children should have all of your good qualities. That your children should have wealth and health and Torah and happiness and children of their own, etc. That's the only bracha that I can give to you. Like, what do you give to the person that has everything? Right? What can you wish somebody that really has no need, right? So you can wish them that they will be fortunate to have children that are in the same position, you know, because no matter how good you have it, right? You have everything that you need. So the one thing that you don't have is surety about the future, right? That's like always the, you know, I often tell my wife with our own children, who Baruch Hashem are wonderful children, but there's always that, like, there's always a bit of anxiety, right? About the kids. And at moments of tsar gidul banim, of a little anxiety about how the children are doing and how they're going to turn out. And I always say, all I want is 10 minutes. I just want to have 10 minutes of the video to see how it's all going to turn out in the end. If I knew in the end that everything would be all right, I'd be a lot more relaxed as a parent now. And if, God forbid, I knew that it wasn't going to turn out all right, I'd be a lot more relaxed as a parent now. It's the not knowing which causes the anxiety. So what's the best bracha you can give to someone who has everything? The one thing that you don't have is an assurance for what's going to be in the future. So if you can bless him that his children should have all of his great good fortune and good merits and good virtue. So that's the real bracha, right? That the descendants, the trees that will grow, you know, from his seed, will have all of the things that he has. Now, this is a very famous Gemara. It's a beautiful thing. You hear it. I once quoted it at one of our children's bar mitzvahs or bat mitzvahs about my wife, whose name happens to be Ilana, so it works out nicely. And you see it on posters and paper cuts and all that other things. But what does it mean, besides it just being a very beautiful passage in the Gemara? Interestingly, there's very little written. There's very little written on this particular Gemara. But I think maybe it fits in with the earlier line about Yaakov Avinu Lomet. Right? So in a kind of mystical sense, we say Yaakov Avinu Lomet. I mean, there are some there's some that really want to say that Yaakov Avinu Lomet, that when he died in Egypt, he didn't really die. Yaakov Avinu Lomet, by most commentaries, does not mean, you know, like the agadic or mystical idea about Eliyahu HaNavi didn't die, which is how in Jewish folklore and Hasidic tales, Eliyahu HaNavi is able to show up, you know, at any moment to save the day. You've heard of Shlomo Karlbach stories. Yaakov Avinu Lomet means that when he died in Egypt, he didn't really die. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu had promised him that he would make it back to Eretz Yisrael. So how, I mean, what is it? You think that was the promise? That he would be buried in Eretz Yisrael? I know that, you know, all the people in Chutz La'aretz, I don't think anybody that is online with us now is in Chutz La'aretz, so we can speak of them in this way, and if they listen to the recording, we apologize. But, you know, the people who live in Chutz La'aretz their whole lives, and they make Aliyah in a box on El Al to go straight to their home in outside of Beit Shemesh at the cemetery. Well, that's not exactly, you know, the vision of Aliyah that we've been hoping for 2,000 years. You think that, you know, coming back for his funeral in Maarat HaMachpelah, that was the promise? So the Gemara says, the Meforshim say, rather, that Yaakov Avinu Lomet means he didn't really die. He was goseis, he was near death. And they took his body to Eretz Yisrael. And when they got to Eretz Yisrael, he was zoched to actually expire in Eretz Yisrael. And then he was buried. So what was that chanit? What was that embalming? How did they embalm? You know, the Egyptians, they embalmed people, which is not exactly a Jewish practice today. So they didn't embalm him. They just perfumed him. Perhaps it meant that they took the body and they perfumed it so that during the decay, you know, which would set in almost immediately upon death, it wouldn't smell quite so unpleasant. So that's one interpretation of what it means, Yaakov Avinu Lomet. Others, the Kli Yakar and the Gemara in Brachot, explain Sadikim b'mitatan einam kuriyim metim. That when Sadikim die, they're not really dead. They're not really dead because their legacy lives on long, long after them. But uh, But clearly, I think this idea of so the Gemara there in Brachot and Daf Yud Tet says that expression Tzadikim are not really dead when they die because they live on after. That's when their children are Tzadikim. If they're just why don't we say that Avram lomet, or Yitzchak lomet, or anyone else lomet? Why is Dafke Yaakov lomet? Because unlike Avram and Yitzchak, who had one son that was on the path and one son that was off the path, all of Yaakov's children were part of the operation. All of Yaakov's children were tzaddikim. And only in a case where all of the children are tzaddikim can you say that a righteous person in his death is as if he hadn't died because the deeds of the children live on afterwards. So that, I think these two ideas connect. That's the statement about Yaakov Avinu Lomet, because you can live on through the righteousness of your children. That immediately intersects with the famous bracha of Ilan Ilan, of what bracha can you give to the tree? What bracha can you give to someone that has it all? The bracha you can give to that person is that their children should be like them. Their children should be tzaddikim like they were a tzaddik. That's the best bracha, to know that it will all work out in the end. Okay, that's Daf. That takes us to the top of Daf Vav. And we will continue next week. Yes, Tuesday is a regular day. Yes?
I mean, it's as regular as anything,
these days. Right? But unless the new Hanchayot say that we can't even meet online, we'll meet next Tuesday. In the meantime, stay healthy.
Gemar Chatima Tova.
Gemar Chatima Tova.
Tadarba.